All right, everyone, we got a great show today. We have a guest, Nora Stamper. She's from Brand 79 in Seattle. We're going to talk about the shooting incident with Brother Anthony Santoro out there in Everett, Washington, by an Amazon driver. Then we get into some of the things happening with ICE out there on the streets in the various cities. And we talk about the government shutdown for a little bit. So looking forward to a great show. Hopefully you guys can get a chance to look at that little video of the people on the bicycle, the guy running away from the ICE agents in downtown Chicago. I thought that was hilarious. All right, hello everyone. Today is October the 5th. We are recording this episode and we have on a special guest, which is Nora Stamper. You can see her on the screen. She's in Branch 79. She waved to you, said hi. That was nice. She is in Branch 79 out of Seattle. And we recently had one of our brothers, he's not in Branch 79, but he's in the area. And she has spoken with some of the people that are, you know, have spoken with him and that are aware of the situation. And so we just wanted to give you guys an update. We're talking about Anthony Santoro. He's in Branch 791, which is in Snohomish County, Washington. He works out of the Everett facility. I think I got all this right. I don't know. And anyway, I asked Nora to come on because I knew she's familiar with the situation a little bit up there. And we want to have a conversation about it, and we want to give you guys some information. So with that illustrious introduction, I don't know, do we have to do the whole thing where it's like, hi, my name is Nora. I've been a letter carrier for this number of years. You know, it's
kind of your name. Name, age, a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's weird. I'll give you the floor. Have at it.
Oh, okay. That is unexpected, I guess, but yeah.
Sorry about that.
Okay, no, you're good. You're good. Yeah, I was out at the district office on Friday and meeting on some grievances with one of the labor reps down there. And another gal comes in the room and she said, oh my God, did you see what's on the news? And that's how I found out what had happened. And kind of surprisingly, that was also how they found out what had happened, when labor has to hear about it from the news instead of from their own people. But yeah, I don't know all the details. I don't know probably much more than, I want to say, I don't want to know much more than anybody else. But basically he, you know, there was an incident between Anthony and an Amazon driver. There's a mailroom in this apartment complex and it's pretty, there's a lot of news stories out there right now. And so something popped off between the two of them where he was delivering the mail and the Amazon driver, I assume, also wanted in to deliver that mail. They got into, let me walk that back, actually, because I didn't know I was going to be giving a monologue here. So stop, erase, walk it back.
You're doing great, by the way.
Oh, thanks. But basically, it was this tragedy up in Everett where an Amazon driver, for absolutely no legitimate reason, shot a letter carrier. His name is Anthony, and he was delivering his mail in this apartment building, right? This is, you know, all pretty common knowledge on the news. And I don't know, they said that he was shot in the face. So I don't know exactly how that happened. He's okay. Right, which is huge, right? I think he got very lucky. I don't know the exact circumstances of what happened, how he got shot, where he got shot, what he got shot with, any of the who, what, where, when, why, and how. I think a lot of that stuff is, you know, still going to come out. But
he's in the hospital,
yeah,
in the ICU. But you said mm-hmm. he's okay, and he's gonna. I guess there's some concern about the vision in one of his eyes long term, but that's, you know, long term we thinking he's gonna be okay. Which is great news, because at first when you heard a letter carrier got shot, you're just like, wow, is it, you know, how serious is it going to be? Are they going to survive? You know, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's scary, you know, anytime any kind of assault like that happens, you know, it's, gun violence is serious, and anything that involves, I think, a shot to the, you know, to the head, the face, these sort of central extremities, that all comes with a lot of risk. And so if the worst thing that comes out of this is he loses some vision, I think he's really, really, really lucky. It's kind of crazy, I guess, from what I hear about it happen, though, because none of that needed to happen. If there was some kind of beef about he's delivering mail and the Amazon driver wants to come in, you know, and use that space, we, you know, not generally don't want anybody in those rooms with us when we have the mailboxes open. From what I've seen on the news, it's not a huge room. I know that I don't appreciate it when anybody comes in when I'm delivering to a, you know, a closed kind of apartment building like that, security reasons, but also just when the boxes are open, edges are sharp, whatever. So I usually will ask, hey, you guys mind giving me a couple minutes? Let me finish up. Let me close up in here, you know, and I'll turn it over. And if you don't like it, you know, if you're delivering and you know, the letter carrier's got that space blocked off, go file a complaint with the apartment building or dump the stuff in the manager's office. Do whatever you got to do. But I cannot fathom any kind of situation where responding to that with a gun and firing a shot is ever appropriate. It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. And so there's a few things kind of that come to mind. And we were having a conversation, you and I, last night about some of these things. One of them is that while we have certain standards of employment for letter carrier, the NACI, the background checks, the whatever, private companies, particularly Amazon, you know, they'll hire anybody. And so, you have people out there that are delivering, that want access to people's homes and, you know, into their buildings, people, you know, whatever, they want access in, and they're not, they don't have the clearance that we have as you know, employees of the United States Postal Service. To me, that's a big issue. The access to the mailbox these days, the access to, and the mailbox is a kind of a moving term a little bit, you know, the access to the mailbox that's like a post in front of somebody's house. I think that's pretty clear that we're the only ones that have access to that. But then you get into like apartment buildings and you get into like people's porches and you get into different things like that. And who has access to that? I mean, everyone has access to people's porch, right? Everyone has access to come into these buildings and make deliveries. And I have a problem with that. I think that the United States Postal Service should be the delivery mechanism for America, and the letter carrier should be the one that's entrusted to do that. One, because we have the universal service mandate, but two, there's also some type of background check and some type of clearance that we go through. And so, you know, this guy, this Amazon driver is, you know, and by the way, he's being arraigned tomorrow. Is that what you understand?
Yeah. There was one person, because all that stuff is fairly public record. There was one person arrested in that city, in that area, for that type of charge on that day. I don't know with certainty. I'm not going to drop out names or anything like that, because I don't know with 100% certainty that that's the guy. And I don't want to off chance drag, you know, somebody that may or may not be guilty or may or may not be the individual accused anyway. But there's only one person arrested and booked into jail on that day for that kind of charge. So yeah, he's supposed to be, I think it's a video arraignment on Monday at 1:00.
Right. 1:00 Pacific time. And yes. And we'll be there. You know, I mean, when I say we, the NALC representatives out there, I talked to somebody today that told me they plan to be there. I don't know how, I guess you get on through a link or something for a video arraignment, but it's a public, you know, it's a public viewing. Is that your understanding?
You know, I'm not sure. It looked like on that county's website, it looked like there, you know, may or may not be some discretion with who they allow in. But I told some of the representatives from that branch, I said, look, just, you know, just request the access, right?
Right. Right.
You know, there's a link, you fill it out, you let them know who you are, why you want to be part of that hearing. And, you know, the worst thing they can do is say no. right? But the answer to the question not asked is always no. So,
right. Yeah, the other issue that comes to mind, or one of the other issues, is the issue of prosecution. And of course, you know, Protect Our Letter Carriers Act, there is, you know, we're trying to increase, we're trying to make sure that people are prosecuted based on federal prosecution laws, that, you know, if you assault, and in this case, you know, shoot at a letter carrier out there on a route in uniform, you know, while performing the duties, that carries the equivalent as if you would shoot at like a federal police officer or something like that. And then the other thing we're looking for is for the federal prosecutors to take up the case, you know, to bring forth charges. I don't think we want charges brought by like state's attorney and stuff like that. This should be a federal crime. We should be respected as the representative of the federal government out there. And that's one thing that I want to see happen. And I would think that that's something that the local carriers there will want to get involved in, is soliciting that federal prosecutor to bring, you know, to take up the charges and not just let the state's attorney, you know, do the lifting on this thing, for lack of a better word. So I don't know. Do we have any, this arraignment, it's being done by the state, right? Not by a federal prosecutor, right?
You know, I'm not 100% sure. I don't know. I could go look.
That's my understanding. But anyway, well, I guess, you know, of course it's real early in the process and we'll see how it goes out. But anyway, that's another thing that I kind of had on my radar. And then there's one more thing that I want to talk about. I don't know what you have as far as thoughts on this, but the whole thing with the postal police, and there is such a thing as postal police. They are under the Postal Inspection Service, but their role is completely different than the Postal Inspection Service. And whenever we have something go out there on the route, and I'm not just talking about this as an extreme situation, but there's all type of, you know, we got crazy customers. They let dogs out on us. They make threats against us. You know, there's all type of perils and stuff out there, and you're out there by yourself as a letter carrier. And it would be nice to be able to contact someone who had the job of looking out for your safety that wasn't your supervisor. Because we've had very bad experiences contacting. Yeah. Right. I mean, even when they do what they're kind of supposed to do, you know, who cares? They're the supervisor. And you know, you can affect delivery, curtail if you need to, those kind of things. But what we really need is a police officer to say, hey, these are our people out here. And you're going to treat them with respect. And anything you do, we're ready to, we know who you are, and we're ready to take action against you. You know, do that threat thing that the police officers do. And the Postal Inspection Service, in theory, could do that. But, you know, honestly, they don't, not very often. Yeah. And they're trying to catch people, you know, they're trying to catch people doing shit. They're not necessarily there to protect us. And so the whole thing with the reason I bring it up is because it's not in the Protect Our Letter Carriers Act. And currently the Postal Service only utilizes their postal police to protect the real property of the Postal Service, the buildings and stuff. And they don't deploy them to, you know, go out on the street, protect us in any kind of way. They don't, you know, they could serve as a liaison between with the local police department, you know, for help file reports, help get information. They could, you know, if it's a serious situation, go out there, talk to somebody. They could shadow us if necessary, you know, that kind of thing. And none of that is possible as long as the postal police are only, you know, they're only doing that one thing, which is protecting the property. And I know Senator Durbin had introduced a bill, and I don't think it's going anywhere, but we should be promoting it. But it's the Postal Police Reform Act, and it really should go in conjunction with the Protect Our Letter Carriers Act, but we have not been promoting it. And I think that's a mistake. I think that's something that we should be promoting, and I think would be beneficial to letter carriers' safety out there on the street.
You're not wrong. I mean, you're not wrong, because where these guys are at, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, it doesn't really seem like a lot of times that they give shit, right? You know, I'm just going to put it bluntly, right? You know, I mean, I had an incident with a, you know, I think we talked about this a little bit yesterday with a customer of mine a couple of years ago, just kind of squatting in this place, a little unstable, had some issues going on. We had some, you know, I wasn't able to deliver their mail because they had a three-legged dog sat up, and he was aggressive. I'd be aggressive too if I was missing a leg. It's fine.
All three-legged dogs are aggressive. I mean,
right? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I'm not judging them, but you know, but these people were, you know, really upset that they weren't getting their mail. They were, you know, I was trying to communicate with them through the right channels. This is why we're holding your mail. This is why we're not delivering to you. Right? These are our policies about animal safety and whatnot. And they were submitting complaints to the post office, and there was a different supervisor that was responding to those complaints. Now, he wasn't going back and, you know, getting it on the computer and saying, hey, does anybody know anything about this? He was just sending emails back to these people saying, we're so sorry. We're sorry your letter carrier did this. We're sorry she acted this way. This is not the behavior that we expect of her. We're going to fix her. All of these things that, you know, and from the customer's perspective, they were basically like, in their mind, because what do they know? They see me coming and they're like, her boss told us they were going to tell her to do her job, and she's still not doing her job. And you couple that with, you know, some, you know, mental health issues. And basically they ended up kind of cornering me down at the bottom of the street and told me they were going to stalk me until, you know, I either delivered their mail or disappeared, basically. And so I got, you know, my local management involved, local police involved, and I tried to get the postal inspectors involved, and they pretty quickly said, yeah, we're just going to let, you know, Seattle police deal with this. Like, thanks.
Yeah, and that's why I keep saying that. That's why there should be a postal police force. Not to say that they would be, you know, they probably wouldn't be in the thousands where they'd be out there on every corner in America, but there would be enough of them where they could at least be a liaison, and, you know, they know how to make contacts with the local police, and they talk that police language and you know, whatever. It would be.
And I mean, having that, I don't know would have, you know, made I don't know that having that would have stopped what happened in Everett on Friday. But at least there would be something, some kind of recourse there, instead of people, you know, wondering, is the state going to take this serious? Is it going to be kicked back to the state? Is anybody going to care about this human being, like, as the federal employee, as a postal carrier that he is, right? Because that, like you said, that is important, and it should be taken seriously. And there is a concern that, you know, it's just going to be, I hate to say swept under the rug, but it's just going to be treated lightly. And from, you know, from what I understand, from what led to it, you know, somebody wanted in a room and couldn't get in that room when they wanted in there, and somebody got shot over it. Like, stop it.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, what we don't want is any type of perception that this is some type of dispute between two delivery drivers. No, this is this is a letter carrier from the United States Postal Service and some person who, you know, works for a private company who just hires anybody. To me, that makes a big difference, and it should be spelled out that way in the law. And, you know, we should have allies and people out there protecting us as the representative of the federal government, the representative of the people of America out there, you know, making deliveries on their behalf. And that should mean something, I think.
And you say making deliveries on their behalf. It's, you know, my understanding that a lot of these people that deliver for Amazon, that drive the Amazon trucks, are not actually Amazon employees. They are employees subcontracted to deliver for Amazon. Basically, there's competing companies with their own little herds of drivers, and, you know, they compete for these Amazon contracts. And so these people in the Amazon vest and the Amazon truck do not actually work for Amazon. You know, you brought up like hiring standards, which, you know, are presumably non-existent, but even just general work standards, right? Amazon puts so much pressure on their people, right? You know, you can't be, they got cameras in the trucks, all of these things that they do to their employees, you know, I'm not going to say that justifies what was done by any sense of the word, but there's definitely some serious issues with both Amazon's hiring practices and the way they treat their, you know, their employees and their contractors.
Yeah, absolutely.
Does it make sense? I don't mean to kind of take it off to, you know, take it down a rabbit hole or anything, but
yeah, and it's issue.
There's definitely very little accountability.
And the whole access to the mailbox thing. I mean, I just really believe that in today's world, so we have the United States Postal Service has always had a monopoly on the mailbox, right? Like nobody else has access to the mailbox except for us. Every person is required to get a mailbox that meets U.S. mail standards. You know, there's always that little insignia on there, like it meets some type of whatever that standard is. And nobody else has access to it. But in today's world where more and more, and even already now, the small parcel is the most significant delivery that's being made out there. And we've always, you know, we've never distinguished, we deliver everything. So whether it's a letter, whether it's a bill, whether it's advertising, whether it's whatever, whatever is needed to get delivered. And so if small parcels are going to be the delivery of the future, then we should be the ones doing it. And the reason why is because when we do it, we're doing it with people, us, that are vetted, that, you know, work directly for the arm of the, you know, the government, which is the United States Postal Service. And we do it everywhere, every day. So you, when you talk about, you get into like costs and stuff like that. If the universal service mandate that we have becomes too burdensome, because on the flip side, we're not getting in the revenue from the deliveries. And so what Amazon's been doing is they take the most profitable deliveries and they do it themselves. And a lot of times they're cutting corners. So because they're able to get onto people's porches, because they're able to get into mail rooms, and because they're able to, you know, leave shit with the doorman or whatever, you know, they're able to make these deliveries outside of, you know, your normal delivery structure, which is the mailbox and the mail receptacle and the, you know, the parcel locker that's there for that purpose, and, you know, those kind of things. We should have, there should be, the delivery mechanism should be us, because we have the universal service mandate. So it makes sense that we have the obligation and therefore we should get the advantage in delivery. And I see that as a bigger and bigger problem going forward. And it's already mm-hmm. affecting us. And of course, you know, you talk about the contractor for Amazon, and you talk about, you know, of course they're pressuring their delivery drivers, you know, just get in there, make the delivery, you know, drop it on the porch, you know, you got to do a certain number per hour or whatever, you know, they're getting those kind of pressures. When in reality, it should be like, hey, you don't have the same access as the Postal Service. These things need to go through the Postal Service as being the delivery mechanism for America. Anything that fits in the mailbox should go through the Postal Service, in my opinion, just like we have a monopoly on first-class mail, right? A private company can't, if you want to deliver a first-class letter, you have to, I forget what the minimum charge would be, right? Why is it any different for a small parcel? Why can you deliver a small parcel but not a letter? Why can a private company do that like Amazon? And so it creates these antagonisms out here on the street.
Yeah.
I guess I went into a little monologue on that one.
That's okay. I mean, speak on it, you know, you're not wrong, right?
Yeah. The good news is we think the brother is going to be, you know, okay. He's been in contact with people. So that's the good news. And we'll keep you guys posted. If they want to send like letters and stuff like that, cards at this point, do we have a place where they can send that stuff, or do we want to wait? I mean, obviously he's in the hospital right now, but he won't be in the hospital by the time you send a card, right? So,
right. Yeah. So there's an address that was put out there for him if anybody wanted to send him card, flowers, love, something like that. But I'm not sure how long he's going to be there for. And so I had spoken with the branch president, because I told her, you know, he's not from my branch, but they're my neighbors, right? You know, they're my state, they're letter carriers, right? And so, you know, I told her, I said, look, you know, anything I can do to support you, you let me know, right? Because this is terrible. And it's so close to home for us, right? Like, it's awful. So I had asked her, you know, would it be better to, you know, to send these things to coordinate somewhere else to send them so that, you know, he continues to get them? And she said she wasn't sure yet. Isn't entirely sure how long he's going to be in the hospital. I think right now, the last thing that I had heard was that he was going to be there until Wednesday. at least, and then they expect that he's going to be moved. I don't know what moved means. I don't know if it means move to home. I don't know if that means move to somewhere out of the ICU. But as if I find out anything else, I'll share it, you know, as I'm able to. And, I, you know, I told her to, you know, they're trying to set something up to, you know, kind of help him, help his family, whatever they can do in the meantime. Just sort of support them while they get through it, because I'm sure nobody expected that that was how, you know, Friday afternoon was going to end up, right?
Yeah. And
I'm looking forward to the weekend. You're going to the hospital.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we always have to assist, make sure that all the OWCP forms are filled out right and all the everything's processed and that all your, you know, medical bills are taken care of and time off work, right. And, you know, just like any other injury.
All those things
out there. So.
So there's an address for him now. And then, you know, as I think, you know, she's maybe a little bit overwhelmed by all of it, and understandably so. Right. I know I would be, right. It's not unreasonable. You know, if I find out anything else or coordinate anything else with her, or she coordinates anything that I can pass on and share, I will. Okay. You know, I know one of the things that we talked about was, you know, trying to get some, you know, support in the form of like a rally, you know, when this dude does inevitably, you know, end up going to trial, if not before, you know, just to show some support for, you know, this needs to be federally prosecuted. Like, we're not going to put up with this.
Yeah, that would be great to see, especially the letter carriers that he works with, you know, take a stand on something like that and put some pressure on the local federal prosecutor. That'd be awesome. You know, you guys have some type of rally either in front of the post office or in front of the federal prosecutor's office, or I don't know, wherever the, you know, wherever you guys see fit, that would be great.
It's so fresh, you know, I hate to say fresh. I don't know if that's the right word to use, but I mean, this really happened, you know, it happened 2 days ago. Right. But, you know, I told her, I said, I got you, whatever you need. If I can help you at all, I will, you know, and I don't want to step on anybody's toes or, you know, tell, you know, a story that's like not mine to tell, but, you know, I think there's a lot of stuff on there, you know, on the news about it already, you know, and it's just an absolute tragedy. Like, none of our people anywhere should get shot delivering the mail ever.
Yep. That's the main thing. Like when we had, when Octavia Redmond, you know, when she was shot and killed last year in Chicago, and it's like, no matter the circumstances, no matter what you think the reasoning was or the motivation was, or whatever, when somebody puts on that uniform and they're out there serving the people, they should be protected. They should know that that they're safe. And the fact that we don't is a big problem.
Yeah, it's not something you go to work expecting. You know, I mean, those of us that, you know, serve in the military, deployed, things like that. You know, you're in a war zone, you get up, you go to work every day, and you kind of expect that, you know, mentally you're there. When you're delivering mail, nobody expects that, you know, nobody expects that, like, that's even going to be, or nobody should, if you are expecting it, oh my God, I'm sorry, nobody should have to even expect that that's something that they're going to encounter while they're walking up and down the street just trying to put paper in a box, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. You know, it's, anyway, like you said, it shouldn't, Your service in the military shouldn't be the same as your service to
you
know, delivering the mail and packages to people.
Right.
Absolutely. All right. Appreciate that. Sarah or Renee, you guys have any thoughts or questions for Nora? You guys good?
No, we're good.
We're good. You speaking for Renee tonight?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, she's speaking for me.
You know, after you work with someone good and, you know, well enough that you know already what they're thinking. So that's beautiful. All right. We wanted to give you guys a little bit of information. The AFL-CIO put out some stuff regarding, I don't know, in every city, but like in Chicago, the ICE agents are all over the place. They were in the suburbs of Chicago for the first week or two, but now they're all over the city, and there's all type of, you know, there's all type of a resistance, I would call it, to these, I was going to say supposed federal agents. I don't know. I got a big issue with the ICE agents. You know, they don't have any purpose in our cities, on our streets. They're not a police force. So like, what are they? But they've been kind of going around rounding people up. I guess a dangerous neighborhood these days is if you're near a Home Depot, because that's a place where they're doing a lot of raiding or whatever it is that they do. But anyway, the AFL-CIO put out this Know Your Rights card for anyone who is detained or stopped or, you know, gets any unwanted attention from those ICE agents. So we thought we'd share that with you guys, and I don't know if anyone has any thoughts or comments. You want to read this thing, or how do we want to do it?
Sure.
It's out in all different languages. So, I mean,
yeah.
pick a language. I mean, we could do English, but of course, if you're comfortable in any of the other languages there, I'd say go ahead and read it in those languages as well.
I'm going to stick with English.
All right.
But it's available from the AFL-CIO website. Like, you can type in AFL-CIO immigration, and you click resources, and it'll have like this same flyer that this is like a card, and then on the other side is Spanish or whatever of the other languages you choose. But it's just information to pass on to other people about knowing your rights if you come in contact with ICE or immigration agents, that kind of thing. So they want you to know you have the right to remain silent. You don't have to answer questions, including questions about your family, where you were born, your citizen status, how you entered the U.S., all of that kind of stuff. Instead, you need to say, I choose to remain silent, or you hand them a card like this, which informs them that you want to remain silent. You have the right not to sign any documents without speaking to an attorney first. Obviously, you don't want to sign something that you can't understand and read anyways. So hopefully people are not doing that. The third thing is, if you have immigration documents, you should be carrying them with you. If you have a green card, a work permit that's not expired, always carry it with you. Never carry false documents or lie about your immigration status. If law enforcement agents come to your home, you have the right to deny them entry unless they have a proper warrant, which is signed by a judge. You don't need to open the door to see the warrant. They can slide a card under the door. And if they have a warrant, law enforcement agents can slide it under the door and hold it to the window to show you. So there's warrants that are issued by ICE, and those don't give immigration agents the right to enter your home unless you give them permission. But if it's a judicial warrant that's signed by a judge or magistrate of the court, then it's a search and seizure and they're allowed to enter your home. But there's differences between them. The one from the Department of Homeland Security is going to be signed by immigration officers. And then the number five step is, you have the right to document any interaction with law enforcement, including like by video or audio. Just make sure you do it safely. Advise officers of your intentions and do not obstruct their actions. So that's
not everyone in Chicago is following that last part, I'll tell you that. There's a lot of these little kind of videos and little TikToks out here that are, I don't know, I'm enjoying it. We're supposed to be in a free society. I don't appreciate anyone coming up to me and asking me about my status, or, you know, I got to carry some specific papers with me or whatever. Like, why should you have to prove anything to anybody?
Right.
Just walking around and moving freely within society. So, and that's good information about if someone were to show up at your house or whatever, we don't have to let them in. So,
yep.
That's good. Nora, we got your cat.
Yeah.
On the scene. I don't know if we got to introduce the cat. But...
Yeah. This is Ted. Ted, buddy. Ted. He's like, I feel like there's a tension over here. I'm going to come get it.
Ted likes the camera, man.
He's like, a cool dude.
what are you guys talking about?
Yeah, he's like, we're talking about your rights and ICE. I'm here for it. Let's go.
Is ICE out in the Seattle area that much?
I mean, yeah, right. Not in that I have seen myself, but yeah, I don't think to the extent that they're in Portland, but where are they not at this point? Right. Yeah.
They're going to the major metropolitan cities.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy to me. I mean, if your concern is immigration, that takes place at the border or in the workplace, you know, because the workplace is where you have to have legal status to, you know, work in that location or whatever. But you're trying to enforce that on the streets.
And there's a way to go about it. And I think what is at least concerning to me is that the tactics that I see just, you know, online in the news being used are kind of, you know, akin to, you know, kidnapping people, right? Exactly. You know, you have people, you hear stories about people that are here legally getting snatched up off the street. And it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
You know, that's a problem, right? I mean, and I don't want to say, you know, I understand both sides, right? I don't want to use that particular phrasing, but I think that if there's, you know, laws that need to be enforced, I don't think that anything gives anyone the right to disregard due process for anybody here. You know, and
snatch people up out on the street.
People. Schools and workplaces, and so that's why, like, the AFL-CIO put this out is for if, you know, they show up in your workplace, so that their union brothers and sisters know what to do. Like if they come with a warrant, instead of letting ICE have access to the building, you tell them you will get that specific person, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
I know my little kid's school, they put out messaging to all the parents like, if the ICE agents were to show up here, we would not be letting them in. We're not going to give them access to your children, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You have to put out that type of information if you're a public school, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 2025 in the United States of America. Like, right. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Appreciate that, Sarah. And then I guess to wrap this show up, the government shutdown is in, what, about 6 days now? How many days is it?
It is 4 days and 20-ish hours.
Almost five.
Yeah.
I was almost close. And obviously, we all know, and NELC put out information on our website that it doesn't affect the Postal Service because we're off budget. But it certainly affects our brothers and sisters that work directly for the federal government. And the concern, you know, it's always been the furlough situation during these shutdowns. But I guess there's a next step, which is that people could be just losing their jobs. And the Trump administration has made it very clear that they don't have a whole lot of respect for the federal worker, you know. And this could be used as an excuse to fire, you know, wholesale, you know, terminating a lot of federal employees. You might not have a job to come back to even after the, you know, they resolve the budget dispute and that type of thing. So I know a lot of our brothers and sisters who work for the federal government are really concerned and worried right now about what's going to happen. I guess the TSA workers are still have to go to work, but they don't get paid.
Yeah.
That's
so shitty. They're still required to go to work. Like if they had scheduled annual, they had to call in to request furlough status. And then a lot of the people that answer the phones for them didn't even know what was going on because they weren't given information like at least the first 24 hours. So that kind of stinks. I mean, they'll get a paycheck on, I want to say Saturday is when they get paid. But after that, they're just going to work with hopes that...
Oh, the Saturday is from the time
previous,
before
the previous
Saturday,
pay right? period.
Yeah. Because they're on the same schedule as us, but they're Saturday instead of Friday. Yeah.
Got you.
Yeah.
Well, if you guys know, you know, people that work for the federal government, definitely check on them and try to get these issues resolved as soon as we can, I guess. See what happens. I don't know. I mean, honestly, I've been waiting for the federal workforce to take some type of job actions, or, you know, a little, be a little bit more vocal about what's going on out there. They're, I mean, they've really been under attack. And, you know, if there's any way we can help them, I think we've made that clear that, well, at least locally we have. I don't know about nationally, but President Renfro has indicated the same thing, that, that we're there as a union to assist, you know, our brothers and sisters that work for the federal government in any way we can. And I still kind of wonder what that assistance looks like. I mean, do they want us to try to reach out to, you know, people in Congress? Is there, are there rallies? Are there actions at job sites? Or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it just seems like it's been kind of quiet this whole year from the federal workforce. I know they're doing some things. I know we attended a rally in Chicago with the VA workers, and, you know, there's been some things out at the airport. But I don't know. It's not that much, it seems like. I don't know. What are you guys' impression been?
Well, I'm personally affected by it because my spouse works for TSA. Unfortunately, like, this is not his first time going through it, so he's prepared. Like, we always have, like, a little nest egg on the side that
the government make sure, shut down, yeah. Rainy day fund?
Pretty much, yeah. Because, I mean, the last time in 2018, it was 35 days. And, like, it's terrible because there are some people that's their only source of income. And right. How do you explain not putting food on the table for your kids?
Yeah, right. 35 days is too long for most people. You know, yeah. A week or two, maybe, you know, whatever. But after that, it's probably too long. Nora, you got any thoughts on this?
No. I think y'all covered it.
Okay.
Basically, it's tough, you know? I mean, I don't think that... It's hard to say a whole lot about it without it getting, you know, political. But, you know, it's really, it absolutely kills me that there are people out there that are, you know, forced to go to work without pay. Right?
Yep.
Yeah,
you know. It seems like there should be a way to, you know, resolve your budget disputes without, you know, having the people that are doing the work not get paid. I mean, that's...
Right.
It'd be different if you said, "Oh, we don't need these airports. Let's just shut down air travel until we resolve our disputes." That would be one thing, but, you know, you're having people go to work, and then you're like, "Well, yeah, but we can't pay you though."
Like, right. Or hey, you have the ability to go, you know, do some other work, you know, some other way to, you know, to get money to put food on the table during this time, but you're kind of
stuck doing
that's
this.
That's not an option either, right? Right.
Now.
Yeah. Right.
I'm pretty sure that the last shutdown ended up, like, a lot of the air traffic controllers called in sick. And it's...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and that was, like, why it had ended.
I remember that. They're like, you know, we're going to actually, if you're not able to pay us, then we're not able to work and keep these airports running. And I do remember that. And that ended up kind of putting some pressure on the people in the federal government to resolve their dispute or whatever.
And then they're also like us, where they can't strike or anything.
Right.
So.
Yeah, they learned that the hard way.
Yeah.
At air traffic controllers in 1980, mm-hmm. they learned that one, but, you know, so, like, I mean, any strike, everyone kind of knows this, I think, that sometimes they're successful, sometimes they're not. I mean, it's not a golden egg or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's a tactic that you can, you know, you got to take seriously whether or not it's the right tactic at the right time, obviously. All right, good people. If there is, unless there's anything else, Renee, do you have any words of wisdom for us? Do you have any questions? Do you have anything you want to jump in here about?
No, not tonight.
Awesome.
Peace, cool. Love, and bacon grease.
Sounds good. Well, I don't have anything else, so nobody else has anything.
No.
I bid you guys adieu on this fine evening.
Yeah.
Just sending, you know, all the love, the prayers, and good energy and everything, you know, to our brother up in Everett.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
Anthony Santoro. We're with you, brother. We're thinking about you, man, and get out that hospital as soon as you can. And if you need anything from the nation's letter carriers, just let us know. We're here to help you. We're definitely a fraternal organization, so need anything, don't be shy about reaching out, my brother.
Yeah.
All right, awesome. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Nora. Appreciate you coming on, taking some time.